Good evening and happy Shabbat to everyone. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. I know on the switchboard we've got Larry and Kirk. How are you, fellas?
Good evening. Just fine.
Very good.
I'm fine, too. I'm fine, man.
What is the latest with JB? Does anybody know? I've heard that pictures of him look not so good, but how is he doing on his recovery process from the broken leg and shattered shoulder?
Have you heard?
I do not know.
Okay. I haven't heard anything recently. Sure, you think he updates me?
Well, we wish him a speedy recovery and hope that he can get back and join us soon and that he can enjoy this special time with his wife, Patty, as she is pregnant and they enjoy their time with family. You know, there were a lot of things to talk about. In fact, Terry wrote me earlier today and said, where are you going today with this program? That you were beginning to look more like a researcher than an artist. Yes, artists do research. To be a great artist, you've got to be a great observer. There's a lot of places, and when I'm prepared to do it, I'm willing to do anything. But I've prepared here to begin a Yom Kippurim discussion because of the. Of the day that we are between to rely on Yom Kippurim. But there's so many things. In fact, as I was searching, Larry, for your quote from Yirmiyah 7, what I found is I was looking at every passage in Yirmiyah that I had translated. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I've done almost everything but 7, it looks like.
Yeah, well, that's funny.
Yeah, and but what I was doing is I started to read Yirmiyah again. Boy, it was a wake-up call. Wow. I mean, Yahweh went way beyond what was required to tell us we ought not be religious.
Yeah, it's astounding. It's astounding. Yeah. The more you dig into the words, he spends so much time exposing religion, and in this case, especially the wild boar and so forth. Of course.
He destroys all the religious symbols, destroys all of the religious holidays, all of the religious message. But, you know, he's even claiming, hey, listen, you claim that I've inspired my testimony, and yet your testimony is entirely different. How can that be? Who do you think you're fooling? Yeah, he's right in
the face. I think they think they're fooling the masses, don't you? Because there's not a chance they're fooling him. And by the way, this Shattering Myths listener who found me on FB and started asking all these questions, I went to her page and she had a rather extensive note on how Chawa had sex with the devil. She shared fruit. I said, well, you know, if you want to call a tree in the center of you know, the enclosure where clearly he's just, you know, made his fruit. I said, go ahead. You know, I said, it seems pretty bizarre. You seem to be on the edge of everything that's weird. You know, she was a Moon Shabbat person. You know, I actually had one of them take and quote Yahusha 7 to me, Joshua 7.
Okay.
Where on the seventh day, you know, they went around Jericho 7 times to prove, get this, the lunar Shabbat. I said, you may not know this, but it wasn't Jericho, it was Jericho.
Yeah.
And what it means is of the moon. So of the moon idea is being destroyed there, but what is being emphasized is the seventh day. And further, you must not understand the purpose of the Shabbat. It isn't to see how big of a lazy ass you are. It's to see if you want to spend some time with Yahweh. Now, I ask, were they spending time with Yahweh?
You know, I'm convinced that the lunar Shabbat is a hoax.
It's insane. It's Torah, too.
Yeah, I would certainly say that it is. There is zero basis for it in the Torah, and that everything that Yahweh says in the Torah would be counter to it. 6 days, you can do your own work on the seventh day. You ought to rest and reflect. That's pretty clear to me. It didn't say the first day of the week, ever hence suggest or otherwise the first day of the week was the first day of the month. And to form any other conclusion, I think, is craziness. By the way, you know, if that were the case, why would Teruah, which is the first day of the month, which would therefore be a renewing of the moon's light, and therefore the first day of the week, why is it a Shabbaton? Why is it a Shabbaton?
Good point. Good point.
I mean, I don't get any of it, but I can tell you this, that even if we are wrong, and that the Shabbat does not start on a Friday evening as we're observing it, and does not conclude on a Saturday evening as we're doing so. Now, the first thing I would ask, if that's not the case, why did he go to such great lengths to pick a year, make 4,000 yah such that we would be the we could have the with his disciples the Pesach meal on a Thursday night, according to the eyewitnesses, the disciples who joined him for that meal, so he could be the Passover lamb on Friday. So that on Friday evening he could begin the fulfillment of matzah, which is a Shabbat, and which has to take place on a Shabbat, because the whole meaning is Shabbat associated. We rest and reflect while he does what is necessary on our behalf. And it was recorded as a Shabbat. And that being the case, why also, if the Shabbat is not a Saturday, as the eyewitnesses tell us that even B'Kodem took place on the first day of the week, which would be the day after the Shabbat, then why is Sukkah in year 6,000 Yah a natural Shabbat as well? If we have them wrong, why are there so many affirmations that it's right?
Well, you got, and then this was another, and then another barb this she threw at me was, oh, so you think the Shabbat starts in the evening? I said, let me ask you something. I said, if it didn't start in the evening, how did Yahusha have a Passover meal and still act as the Passover lamb the next day? Was it not Pesach? Did he do that out of order, too?
Why didn't Yahweh tell us, as he's introducing each of these invitations, that they began at sundown?
Yeah, I have no idea. He was wasting his time, apparently, with these people. I'm just so tired of them.
Why does he not tell us if the weeks are denoted by the beginning of months? Why is this the 13th and 14th day of the month? As opposed to the days of the week to designate the time. Designated by the day of the week. There would be no reason to tell us that matzah is a Shabbaton if it always fell on a Shabbat, would there?
No, there wouldn't be. And in addition to that, why is it Yahweh tells us over and over and over, you people hate my name, you're going to take my name away, you scribes are all, you know, worthless. But he never mentions once you're going to change my Shabbat. Never once.
No. He mentions a bunch of times that you'll ignore it and that there's a consequence for ignoring it, but there's not a single time where he said you changed it.
Yeah,
well, the Christians don't claim to have changed it. They just issued a new day for an entirely new reason.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's Christians, but these are supposedly people. What I find is there's a group of people out there who have somehow found Yahweh's name, although it's never correct. It's always a U instead of a Y in there. And beyond that, they've usually had a lot of association with messy antics. And then beyond that, they get into their secret books. They have to have secrets.
Right.
Yeah, well, they have to have Henoch, and then they have to have veganism, and they have to have everything. It just goes on and on and on. I mean, the list is endless. And every one of them is a path that is separate and apart from the Torah. And I see why there are only thousands that find Yahweh's mercy. And it isn't because Larry Hendricks is doing such a wonderful, phenomenal job on it either. But it is because I do care about his words, and I seriously consider his words. Right. And that's really about what he asks of us,
right,
to act on the words that we've seriously considered, and there really isn't much for you or me to do. Matter of fact, there's almost nothing we can do.
Right. If we weren't flawed and didn't have issues, less than ideal representatives, we wouldn't be representing him. The Yahweh has never used a perfect messenger or anybody who could make a claim that he was qualified to be a messenger, ever.
But so can you imagine using Yahusha 7, where he's getting rid of the moon? I mean, are you kidding me? Now you got a lunar Shabbat, you're trying to prove it with that? Of all things.
Go ahead,
Kurt.
No, I was just saying, when there's so much to learn from what God is laid out so simply, what is this desire to go find some secret whatever? I mean,
well, I'm glad you
feeling
that, because that's what I'm feeling. That's exactly
they're
what
feeling
I'm
feeling. I've thought of that.
I have no problem extrapolating. Yahweh says something, I have no problem extrapolating. For example, I have extrapolated to understand Isha. Now, my extrapolations were all based upon doing lots of research and making the connections, and based upon the connections, and we're going to consider Isha in a minute, to consider what Isha must mean, considering the evidence. But I'm extrapolating, and I'm not embarrassed to say that not only am I extrapolating, but there's a possibility that I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what I have found is that Yahweh wants us to extrapolate. Because if we're not extrapolating, if we're not making connections and making extensions from those connections, we're not growing. We're not learning.
Suffering the Torah. You mean?
Right. We're not participating in this voyage of discovery if we're not extrapolating and forming conclusions based upon the evidence. But these are the kind of things that I think are important to note. That when so much of what he said is clear, like the terms and conditions of the covenant, why would we spend time trying to establish a doctrine when that doctrine is not evidenced and is strictly our own extrapolation, rather than spend time on that which is readily known? And I'm only going to extrapolate, too, on things that are really essential to my understanding of something that's important to God. We're going to extrapolate here twice this evening. And I'm going to say, here's where we're extrapolating. And I'm open to correction if somebody thinks that they've got a better explanation. But please don't give me the religious translation, because I'm not buying it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be with Isha. It's going to be with Ana. In fact, there's a third. We're going to have to deal with Malacca. So there's three words, and we're going to examine those three words, and we're going to come up with the best understanding we can. And I'll guarantee you that if we invest the time, we're going to leave here smarter than we were when we arrived. So here's the beginning of Kippurim. And I'm pretty sure that Yahweh has seven invitations to meet with him. I'm pretty sure they're Moed Mikraes. I am pretty sure they're invitations, and that God's expecting our attendance, and that there is a consequence for ignoring his invitation. I'm pretty sure that's the case. So then, and by the way, the reason is because of what he said. Then Yahweh declared the word. So this is Ana Dabar to Moshe, saying, Amar, on the 10th, this is from Asor, which means to enrich and to become rich. You know, if you're going to have your relationship reconciled, if you're going to be restored in your relationship with Yahweh, the consequence is always to be enriched, always. So it's on the 10th because 10, the Hebrew word for 10 and the Hebrew word for enrichment are the same. So, you know, we talk about magnitudes of 10. Well, that's what Yahweh was speaking of when he speaks of 10. So, really important to pay attention to anything that is 10. Shavuot, by the way, is all about 10s. We are enriched and empowered because of Shavuot's reference to a 10th part. So, Then Yahweh declared the word to Moshe, one who draws out, saying, on the 10th of the 7th month. He didn't say on a Wednesday.
No.
You know, it would be, it'd be the third day of the second week. If the week, if every week started with a renewal of the moon's light, this would be the third day of the second week. He doesn't say that. It's the 10th. And he said 10th for a reason. Because 10th speaks of the enrichment that comes by way of being reconciled in your relationship with Yahweh. And Kodesh...
10 is also completion, isn't it? Just like 40.
Yes. Yeah. Now, the 7th month, is Kodesh, from Kadosh, means to renew, is the day... And by the way, can you imagine Yahweh? This is just something that would be simply astonishing to me. Yahweh chose a word for month that is equivalent to, is exactly the Hebrew word to renew and to restore. Now, wouldn't the first day of every month, if there is a lunar week, be a Sunday, the first day of the week? Do you think that Yahweh...
Yes, it would have to be, or all the calendars would be wrong everywhere, right?
Right.
I mean,
isn't Yahweh's day of restoration the Shabbat and not the first day of the week? Isn't the first day of the week the day that we are busy doing our own thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So there is a 0% chance that he's going to call the first day of the week, which would be the first day of the month, on the lunar Shabbat, the day of restoration, which is what Kodesh means. Just something to think about. When you're not that it's going to appeal to the lunar Shabbat people. Is the day Yom of Reconciliations. So, can you celebrate reconciliations anytime you want? How in the world can the religious Jews celebrate Yom Kippur as they do? They forget the YM at the end of it, but you know, that's a minor copy edit to the others. How can they celebrate it on the this instruction, on the right day, on the 10th day of the 7th month, if in fact 10 days earlier they celebrated Rosh Hashanah? Isn't there somebody in rabbinical Judaism, some follower of rabbinic Judaism, say, wait a minute, we just celebrated the start of the year, and now we're going to, as our holiest day on the calendar, we're going to celebrate...
Month.
The 10th day of the 7th month?
Yeah, it would be, it would be quite a consideration, you know, to have a first day of the 7th month.
Is anybody thinking? Is anybody thinking here?
It just goes to show how pig-headed religion really is.
Oh, of course. Yeah, just not thinking. It's a day of reconciliation. By the way, why would you need to reconcile your relationship if you're dealing with the beginning of the year? It hadn't even broken yet. There's a reason that reconciliation is at the end of the year. That's when the relationship is reconciled. Because Yahweh made promises to Abraham, and over and over and over again to his prophets, that he ultimately, because of who he is, not because of who they are, is going to reconcile his relationship with Yisrael and Yehudah. And so if reconciliations preceded Pesach, you would have the relationship reconciled before it was broken. You'd have the relationship reconciled before people were made immortal or perfected or adopted. It would be insane. You would also have Yahweh fulfilling a promise before he made it. So, reconciliations is about his reconciliation with his children, with Yisrael and with Yehudah, of which we are adopted into that family the day before the Mikre, 5 days before. He establishes the millennial Shabbat on Earth. Kirk, do you know why there's a 5 day separation between his return and the millennial Shabbat? Why wait 5 days? Why 5 days?
I'm not sure.
Okay, Larry, you have any idea why 5 days?
Well, I'm considering a full moon. It opens up with a full moon and ends with a full moon.
Oh, yeah. Yahweh loves the 14th and 15th, because that's those are the days of the full moon. He likes to camp out with a full moon. That's why Pesach and Matzah and Bukkotim are full moons.
And I also think that 14th, that's the 15th, five 16th. Steps.
Yeah.
But there's five steps to get to
the covenant. Five benefits of the covenant.
Yeah, five benefits.
Correct.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That would be my only guess. Yeah.
You know, if man is sick, and the mikra of Kippurim is the sixth mikra, reconciling the relationship with man. Man is the number six, created on the sixth day, and you're reconciling your relationship with man on the sixth day, so that we can all camp out with Yahweh on the seventh. There's something that has to happen between the reconciliation and paradise, before the earth resembles Eden. What is on the earth at the time of his return that was not present in Eden?
Well, everyone's still there until he returned.
Religion.
Religion.
Religion is there. Religion is there.
There is a cleanup at the end of Kippurim.
Right. So there has to be a cleanup. And the number that's associated with confusion, with
five,
is five.
Right. Yeah, because that's when all the great religions were established.
Well,
in the terms of creeping things and reptiles and snakes and what he calls them. Yeah. Sure.
Yep.
Okay. So
absolutely. So those 5 days between the two, because he's ridding the world of all traces of demonic, satanic corruption.
Snakes.
Yeah, the snakes, the reptiles, the serpents, because of the fact that in Eden there was no religion at all, no church, no synagogues, no politics, no capitals, no militaries, no politicians, and so he's going to return the entire earth to the condition found in Eden, which means he has to rid it of all corruption, just as he did with the flood, leaving only Noah and his family. So that is what the reason that there's that separation of days. Now, he calls this the Day of Reconciliation, which means pardons and forgiveness. This exists, this will be, a set apart in cleansing, a Kodesh, invitation to be called out and meet, Mikre, for you to approach, La et Him. All right. Highest powerful words, basis of Yahweh's name. The fact that every one of these days is similar to Yahweh's name, is similar to Jerusalem, is similar to Yisrael, is similar to the Shabbat. They're all Kodesh. There's something. What else is Kodesh that's really important to Yahweh?
And the family.
Yes. And how do we become family? Is there a
we're adopted
part of Yahweh's nature
family.
That's called Kodesh? Is there actually does Yahweh have a part
Ruach.
Of his nature that's actually called Kodesh, right?
Sure.
She is the Ruach Kodesh.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's telling us this is a Kodesh day. So it's a day that is that has an affinity with the Kodesh Ruach, the set apart spirit. That is called out to meet, an invitation to be called out to meet. No more important Hebrew word than kara. It's a meeting for reading and reciting based upon kara, to call out, to summon, to proclaim, to welcome, to meet, and to encounter. Pretty much, you know, if you just look at the title that Yahweh used for all seven mikra, you pretty much understand the purpose, to read, to recite, to be called out, to call out, to be invited into his presence, to meet with Yahweh, to proclaim his name, to welcome others into his family. Doesn't that pretty much define every one of them?
Sure. And what more important than to listen to what he has to say?
Yeah.
And that, did he say that that these were... Did he call this a a humbling sacrifice for my benefit so that you will humble yourselves to make me feel good?
No.
We're getting to the absurdity of that. I mean,
no,
he humbled himself.
Yeah, la hakem. La in Hebrew means to approach. Atem is you.
You have to walk to approach.
Right. So it's a called out, set apart meeting, an invitation for you to approach. Approach whom? Ooh, wait a minute. Who's the
Yahweh?
Yahweh. By the way, is this Moshe's Torah here we're talking about?
Moshe doesn't have a Torah. Yahweh has a Torah.
There you go. Absolutely. Yahweh speaking in first person here. And I think it's always important to listen to what God has to say when he speaks in first person. All right, so he has said that on the 10th day, which is the day of enrichment, of the 7th month, which is the promise based upon the formula of 7, month, which is a time of renewal, there is a day to be reconciled. And that this day was, is, and always will be Haya, set apart as an invitation to meet, to read and recite, for you to approach. And your soul shall respond and answer, Ana. Now, this is amazing in that Ana is typically rendered, and you shall afflict yourself. Nefesh is typically changed to yourself, even though nefesh is not yourself, it's soul. And ana is rendered, you should afflict. You know, the reason they have to change both words is that you can't afflict a soul.
No.
They have a heck of a time trying to do something harmful to my soul. My soul can be locked away for all time. My soul can die and cease to exist. I can't afflict it. Larry, you got any idea how you'd afflict your soul?
Nope, and that's why Dante's hell doesn't exist.
There you go. So you can't afflict your soul, which is why the religious translations changed a na to afflict and then nefesh, soul, to yourself.
Do they have that? Do they actually have that, like, say, in a Strong's, a na meaning afflict?
Yeah.
I guess they probably
one
do.
Of them, yeah.
So that way they get to reinforce their delusion on all their Bible-thumping believers.
Yep. Yeah, let's go. I will let's talk about Ana here because it's one of the words we have to answer. There are 14 different potential definitions, actually more than that. There are 10 positive definitions and 14 negative definitions associated with Ana. And that's very common with Hebrew words. There's a dark and light side, a positive and detrimental side of
Can I add one thing here before
sure.
you go? Yeah, the problem is we're talking about one of Yahweh's Moed Mikra, so the dark side and the negative wouldn't be there. I just want to point that out.
Particularly since, what is this day called?
Reconciliation.
So, yeah, is it possible to have a positive, there is no negative associated with reconcile. Reconcile is 100% positive. Can the path to a positive be a negative?
No. And
you achieve a positive through a negative.
You can't reconcile and slap somebody upside the head when it came over to reconcile.
Do you find life through death?
No.
Do you find truth through lies?
No.
Do you find light in darkness?
No, it just points out the absurdity of it all. Just
right.
go that way.
So you don't find
you two have just failed divinity school. You've just failed divinity school. You're not going to be registered theologians anywhere. I can tell you that.
Well,
right
there
now.
You go. I'm not going to get my PhD in theology. Hmm. All right. So here's the primary definition of Ana. The number one preferred definition of Ana. It happens to be an absolute perfect fit for an invitation. It means to answer. The secondary definition of Ana is also what we consider, you know, when you offer an invitation, there's an RSVP, you're asked to respond. The secondary definition of anah is to respond. The third definition of anah is to testify, speaking as a witness. The fourth is to think, especially to be thoughtful and concerned. The fifth is to ask questions. The sixth is to receive answers. The seventh is to speak truthfully, providing accurate information. Eight, reply by making a declaration. Nine, sing or shout, verbally and vocally communicating. Ten,
like recite?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely, like recite. To live together in a marriage. Like, those are the 10 definitions of anah that are all the preferred definitions and all fit the context.
And 5 and 6 give you the rationale to ask questions and
receive
try to figure these things out. So that allows you to think out of the box.
Right. By the way, when you read and recite Yahweh's testimony, it's we're always seeking answers, which means we're asking questions and looking for the answers. That's where we receive it. If we want to speak truthfully, just recite what he said. You know, if we're going to be thoughtful, why not be thoughtful about the Yahweh's witness? And if God's going to invite us to a party, all right, shouldn't we answer the invitation and respond? The first and second definition. So the
typically, when I get a RSVP in the mail, I run my head into the wall. That's just
yeah,
me.
Typically what I do, too. I think that's the appropriate thing to do. Now,
okay, so you're the other idiot. Okay,
yeah,
I didn't know.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So there is a day that Yosha allowed his body to be afflicted, and there's a day that Yosha allowed his soul to be afflicted. What are those 2 days?
Passover and Matzah.
They are indeed. So why would, since Yosha, with the living embodiment of the Torah, since he fulfilled the Torah, why would reconciliations be the day to afflict one's soul when he's already done that on our behalf?
Because Satan wrote that, okay? And because you want to take his place. Because after all, you're good enough.
Don't say me. some religious
thing. Someone is probably good enough. So if they just afflict themselves, then all that affliction that Yahusha took wouldn't even have been necessary. Because, after all, people like me, you know, that's it. That's the
On the demonic side of the ledger, anah conveys to be preoccupied, which is the nature of religious and political people. So many people today, they're just too preoccupied to care. To be too afflicted and to be afflicted. To be put down, to be depressed, to be cast down. You know, think about all these things and the in the context of a day of reconciliation. Can you imagine? You're going to be reconciled on a day that you're too preoccupied to care about the relationship. You're going to be reconciled by harming yourself, afflicting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That the way to reconcile your relationship with God is to be put down. Now, can you imagine, you've just reconciled your relationship with the creator of the universe, and your initial reaction as well, that's depressing.
Well, I mean, you remember Yod is also 10, and that's
yep.
the hand reaching down to lift you up.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
it's no putting you down, it's all lifting you up.
Right.
Well, again, it's appropriate to point out here that somebody that knows Yahweh and understands his nature and has thought about his words and chewed that cud mm-hmm. really ought to be the one sharing those words.
Right.
And people who went to some academic school and decided that religious translations were good enough to do, these are the last people you want to listen to. And this is why religious books are dangerous, by the way.
Why would somebody, you know, one of those rabbinic Jews, one of the Pharisaic Jews, question their religion when the holiest day on their calendar is about afflicting oneself? And they look at the word anah and say, wait a minute, why would we do that in the spirit of reconciliation? Because it means to be depressed, to be cast down, to stoop or to bow down, to humble oneself, to be humiliated, to be disturbed and worried, feeling anxious, to be raped and violated.
That would be like religion, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it really would.
Sound like Islam to me.
Yeah. Become weaker.
Well, it sounds like any number of religions to me.
Yeah.
Because anybody that's bowing down to Yahweh, we already know, gets pounded into dust, don't they?
I mean,
we know this by his words. So if we're going to go down there and we're going to afflict ourselves, and that's why they call it the day of afflictions as well. So, you know, they can get your head moving in that direction. Atonement to me almost sounds like afflictions. I know it doesn't exactly mean the same thing, but it's the religious bent.
I know. Yeah, there's a lot of rhetoric associated with atonement that kind of carries around a repentance. And I watched a movie with my wife the other night called Chocolat, and it was about an oppressive Roman Catholic mayor of a town, calling everybody all satanic. Yeah, when he was Bridgetown, when he was really the satanic individual, and just making everyone depressed.
By the way, they call that a chick flick. My wife made me watch it.
I watched it with my wife.
And
I actually enjoyed it because of how the character of the Roman Catholic Church was presented up to the very end, where the little priest, wimpy as he is, talks about how tolerant Jesus was, and how we ought to be tolerant too, and he was accepting of everybody, and you just go, just gag me. I mean, why not actually pay enough attention to think about his words, because there was nothing tolerant about what he said. It's just, you want just people to wake up. But nonetheless, no one bothers to question anything. But this exists as a set-apart and cleansing invitation to be called out and meet for you to approach, and your soul should respond and answer, replying to the signs, making a declaration after engaging in thought, vocally communicating. And then this next word is karab. Karab means to approach. Approaching. He's just talked about approaching. Coming near, being present with. Now, the following word is the one that we said we would be the second word we would dissect. So you're asked here to respond to an invitation, to answer an invitation, and to appear before and approach. And the word that follows is the feminine word for fire, or the word for mother. And so, do we have something that is associated with Yahweh, with Kodesh, that would be an opportunity for us to be enriched, to be empowered?
The Ruach, as in she.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Feminine.
Yeah. Feminine.
Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Right. The adoptive mother who purifies, who enlightens, and who elevates. Isha. You know, Yahweh refers to himself, the manifestation of himself on the top of Mount Horeb, as Ish. He uses the masculine word for fire. Now, here, on a day of reconciliations, after all of this, he's using the feminine word for fire. And here's my thought as to why he is using the feminine here, beyond the association with Kodesh, and that she puts us in this garment of light that makes us look perfect in God's eyes, that he can even clean up what were formerly religious Jews, to make them look perfect, is that there was a difference between Yosha on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to return as Bukurim. On Pesach, he began Pesach as both mortal man and soul,
spirit,
and also as spirit.
As in the Ruach was all over him.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the Ruach's presence on him was still... secondary, if we will, to the his role at that moment as the physical, diminished manifestation of the sacrificial lamb.
In the male lamb, yeah.
That, right. So he was, you know, Yahweh, when you're dealing with the diminished manifestation, Yahweh has the ability to ratchet up and down. You know, for example, he was brilliant, so brilliant on the top of the mountain, evidently ratcheted it up, that the Israelites said, I don't know where to see that blazing fire anymore. And when he appeared transfigured to Jacob, to Shimon Kefesh, and to Yahochanan, you know, he was brilliant and glowing. He's coming back looking like a constellation of stars. And so he's coming back an even more vibrant, spiritual, therefore illuminated being, less diminished than he was even on Bukhurim. And so this is his return. And upon his return, he's going to be mostly spiritual energy and very little physical entity. So I think that referring it to the set-apart spirit makes sense. Also, when Yahusha was telling his disciples, post-Bukhurim, that there would be one that would be coming and that they should recognize her because she is akin to him. It is therefore the set-apart spirit that provided the enrichment and enlightenment of Shavuot.
Right.
This is the 10th day. This is an enriching and enlightening experience provided by the same entity, the set-apart spirit.
You say man can't make this up. I mean, this is too much detail, too well
thought
out.
Yeah, right.
You can't.
So, if we're going to camp out with Yahweh, we have to come to the presence of and be adorned by the set-apart spirit's light.
Well,
and therefore, Yahweh
says that. It says,
right,
if you're not covered in her, you're melting.
Right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you have not heeded this and are not approaching the set-apart spirit and enveloped in her light on Yom Kippurim, then the very presence of the returning Yosha will vaporize you.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
When the Yehudim and the Israelites turn and get reunited on that day in 2033, what led up to it? Was it just the fear? I mean, at some point they had to go read it and not read their Talmud. They had to be driven to the Torah, and there's not a lot of those that don't take an awful lot of work to get to the heart of it. I mean, at what point do they, you know what I'm saying, is how do they all of a sudden turn this around where they recognize?
Yeah, day of affliction. Yeah, how do you get to from Yom Kippurim to a day of affliction?
Seven years of hell is how that works.
Well, I mean, you can do it out of fear, but I mean, it still won't give you, it won't necessarily give
you the understanding. I'm going to make this a little more personal for you, Kirk.
Okay.
How did you get from the Sermon on the Mount to Christianity? Did you have to just ignore it? You couldn't process it, right?
No, couldn't process it.
Now, if you wanted to be in a Christian environment, you had to absolutely completely distance yourself from
the door.
Right. You had to left your brain at the door because if you processed the information, you couldn't be a Christian. You couldn't be rational. The same thing is true with rabbinic Judaism. I mean, all you have to do is look. If you're observant, you're going to give up the religion. So here, now let's read this all in context because it makes beautiful sense. It says, then Yahweh declared the word to Moshe, saying, on the 10th, the day of enrichment, of the 7th, which is the day of promise, month, which is the time of renewal, is the day of reconciliations. This exists as a set-apart in cleansing invitation to be called out and meet, a time for reading and reciting, for you to approach, and your soul should respond and answer, appearing before and approaching. the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates to approach Yahweh. What part of that's hard to understand?
Well, it's not if you read it and you get a translation. And I think possibly the reason it interests me so much is this week I was talking to one of my students who's Jewish, and she was telling me she was going to fast. And I'm saying that, and we talked about it, and, you know, and so and eventually she, and she, when she left, she was going to go home and read Yad Yah. So I'm hoping she did. But I mean, it's just.
Yeah, where's your fast? I don't know where there's a fast in here.
Well, that's when you flick yourself. So to her, so friction is she fast. So, yeah.
I guess. You know, this word to approach law that's appeared a couple of times here, it is a single letter in Hebrew. It's a preposition in Hebrew. Prepositions talk about direction. And it's a preposition. It's a single letter, a lament.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a shepherd's staff, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine being a better use of a letter talking about approaching the ultimate shepherd, our Father, the Almighty, than a shepherd's staff as the word to approach?
No, that's true.
But he's providing the guidance for us to approach him.
Yeah, that's right. As the shepherd, there's no
that's
doubt
the shepherd
there.
Staff.
Yeah, sure.
So to fully appreciate the meaning of Isha, it's introduced to us in Shemot 29:18. Now, it's always good to see how Yahweh uses the term. Now, in 29:18, let's consider the context. It says, burn, which is guitar, rendering is smoke, the entire lamb on the altar. It rises up, Olah. It ascends to approach Yahweh. As the spirit of soothing acceptance, Rayak, the adoptive mother who purifies, enlightens, and elevates, Isha, serves as a counselor, reconciling us to approach Yahweh. Have we not just had the word defined here? Is not the spirit the soothing spirit of acceptance?
Yep,
isn't
right
it what Olah helps us rise up? Isn't it enables us to ascend based upon what the Lamb did on our behalf?
Mm-hmm.
And when Yosha spoke of the one who would come, that they would recognize who would be the one that empowered them and was the one who empowered and enriched them on Shavuot. Didn't he specifically use counselor?
Mm-hmm.
Was he not citing, therefore, the Torah?
Yeah. All right. Shavuot.
Yosha answered
the question for us then, didn't he? Because of our spirit.
Right. There is something I'd like to throw in here from Yirmiyah, Yashiyah. And he says this. He says, what is it to me, the many sacrifices of yours, says Yahweh? I have completely satisfied and literally fulfilled the uplifting offerings of lambs. Now, who in the world are we talking about here? Yahweh is the one doing all this, and we're talking about Yahusha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's now we're not going to see that within King James where it's
yeah. Yeah, I thought you were going to cite in Yeshayah the statement where Yahweh speaks of the nature of His Spirit, and you know, He calls the Spirit of Yahweh, but He also says the Spirit is the Counselor.
Yeah, man.
The Spirit of Counsel. And
I suppose there's 700 of them we could go to, but certainly, yeah, when he's talking about his physical manifestation, and he's clearly talking about the Ruach being all over Yahusha.
Right.
We did a whole show on this. I made a note of this.
Reconciliation. This is not Pesach. So the physical manifestation is Pesach. The spiritual manifestation is reconciliations. It's Shavuah. It's Bukurim. And it's Kippurim. These are spiritual. Yahweh manifests himself as Father, Heavenly Father, Spiritual Mother, and in the diminished, twice set apart manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
Because these different manifestations of Yahweh help to complete and fulfill the promises and plan that he has made. And there are times, for example, our soul, and he's speaking of our soul here, right? Our
mm-hmm.
soul can't be nourished by lamb. Our soul can only benefit by that which is spiritual. Period. So
now,
it's
once
our
you're
soul
physically gone,
it's our soul that comes into the presence. And so our soul can only benefit from spirit. And so he's given us every reason to understand that this is our spiritual mother.
You know, in Job, he talks about how the Ruach works in conjunction with the Nesama.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, it's as You're simple
right.
as that. I mean, if it isn't the Ruach, that's one of the reasons these people come up with all this delusional nonsense when they're talking to they're talking to Yahweh or Yahusha or whoever they're claiming they're talking to when they come up with things in opposition to the Torah. You say, well, where's the Ruach in all this? She's the one feeding you.
Right.
You know, what's going
right.
on here?
Yeah. Now, Yahweh wants to make it clear that reconciliations is not something that we physically do.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of physically afflicting yourself is negated by this next statement. All that we are doing here is answering the invitation, coming into the presence of the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light. So he says, do not perform on the day any of the service of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering day. By the way, life-sustaining,
mm-hmm.
isn't that a spiritual endeavor? Don't we, our lives get sustained when our souls are immersed in
clearly.
The of our spirit?
Clearly. It's an eternal thing, actually. Yeah, that's life-sustaining.
Right. Yep. This is a stem. It's a very substantive, invigorating and healing, essential and corporeal day. You know, when he says, you know, only the Father knows the day, it's the only day known to the Father. Kippurim is the essential day. It's the one and only. It's the very essence of Yahweh's plan. So it's he says, do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger, Malacha, the task of God's envoy and the work of his representative. By the way, Malacha, this is something I don't think I've ever shared before, but I will want to share it in this context. What does the ah ending do to the Hebrew word malach? What is
makes
the Hebrew word malach?
Makes it
right.
feminine.
Right. Yeah. Right. And what is malach?
That's a messenger.
It's a messenger. It's a feminine messenger.
Right. So this is a feminine messenger, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That means
the Ruach, that's that mother we just talked about up there. Yeah.
Since she cleanses, we ought not baptize. Since she empowers, we ought not try to ourselves bless. Since she uplifts, we ought not try to lift up. And that's what's being conveyed here.
And don't afflict yourself.
No.
That was the first thing that came to my mind, Kirk, which was, beating on yourself isn't going to be much of a work of the heavenly messenger or Malacha.
But do not perform any of the service of the feminine messenger.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh only has one feminine messenger. Even the Malach, as he describes it, first of all, the Malach are, with very few exceptions, never have a gender associated with them. There's a few times that they have a gender associated with them, not because they're a sexual creature. It's just that Hebrew always presents things as male, as female. They have a few neuter nouns, but very few. And so but Gabriel is presented, you know, masculine, and so there are a few masculine concepts. Hasatan, the adversary, hello, the Shakar, is presented masculine.
Because I think that that's a war thing. I really do.
Yeah, I think so, probably too. But the fact is that Yale only has one feminine spiritual aspect and messenger. And the very aspect of him that's designed to help us understand his message, that helps convey his message. Mm-hmm. It's a set apart spirit.
Yeah.
On this set apart day. So do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger, the set apart spirit, on this life sustaining and empowering day, which is what he does. That's what he does in Shavuot. Indeed, this, the day of reconciliations, is for you to be pardoned and forgiven in the presence of Yahweh, your God.
Hallelujah.
All right. So what's the purpose of the day?
To be forgiven.
So there you go. And is the purpose of the day to be afflicted?
No. It's to be repaired.
So, by the way, why don't Christians claim that it's Easter that you are forgiven? Would you explain to me why then God says that the day of reconciliations is the day for you to be forgiven? Who is he forgiving, by the way?
If
you've already, as we have done, to be part of the covenant, have taken advantage of Pesach, Matzah, Makodim, Shavuah, and been his troubadours on Teruah, we don't need to be forgiven for anything, do we?
No.
Because
he's talking specifically to Yehuda, I think, there.
And Yisrael. And the reason that I would say and Yisrael is that Yehuda and Yisrael have been split ever since the time of Ephraim and ever since the time that Benjamin warred with Yehuda, apart from the northern kingdom warring with Israel. They have been split. For a very long time. And Ephraim was the first to be cast away from Yahweh, and then Benjamin, and finally Yehuda. And so Yahweh doesn't want his family ruptured. And so he is simultaneously uniting Yisrael and Yehuda with each other and then with himself.
Yeah, and by the way, when you talk about that, there's also, a promise that was made to Abraham, and it wasn't just for Yehuda, it was for all of Yisrael.
Yeah, absolutely, and so we are adopted into this same family, but just because we're adopted doesn't change the specificity of the promise to the literal descendants of Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob. And this is his promise. And we'll go through Zechariah, and Yahweh specifically says that he is providing the spirit of reconciliation and acceptance upon Yisrael, so that they are in a position to approach him. And he's doing it because of who he is and because of what he has promised. So he says, do not perform any of the service of the heavenly messenger on this life-sustaining and empowering day. Indeed, the day of reconciliations is for you to be pardoned and forgiven, to approach the presence of Yahweh, your God. Because any soul, now this didn't say any person, this didn't say, it says soul, nefesh. Any soul who by way of relationship, asher, does not respond to the summons and answer on this life-sustaining, corporeal, and empowering, this Issem, invigorating and essential day, these shall be cut off and separated from the family.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, corporeal. Keep saying that. Well, that's why in Yashayah, he said, here I am. Look at me. You can touch me. I'm here. I'm in physical form. Something that the rabbis say can't happen, by the way. So that's a bit of in your face there, too.
This is a corporeal day. Absolutely. Okay. And Yahweh was saying, okay, I've been patient. I'm offering you this day of reconciliation. But if you don't avail yourself of it, if you don't respond, if you don't act, if you blow it off and don't answer the invitation, I want you to know you're going to be separated from me for all time.
Once again, this
is the last opportunity prior to returning to Eden. And to be excluded from Eden is to either die or to be put in Sheol.
Serious consequence.
Right. The children of the covenant are going to be in Eden with Yahweh. Those who did not answer this invitation will be excluded. And to be excluded, there are two options. Eternal separation, which is what is spoken of here, and being cut off. He has cut off and separated. It's kara, which is to be K-A-R-A, karat, I should say, K-A-R-A-T, excommunicated, banished, uprooted, and exterminated, vanquished, and expelled. The word provides both of those options. Eternal separation and the total diminishment of one's soul to the point it no longer exists.
Yeah, and by the way, it's also the way to, you know, cut one into the covenant. That's the same.
But, yeah, cut into the deal.
Correct.
Meaning. Yeah. Meaning.
Oh, yeah. It's the opposite of, it's the same word, but applied differently. And any soul who by association performs any of the business of the heavenly messenger, the set-apart spirit, on this life-sustaining and empowering day, that soul I will annihilate from the midst of the family. Abad, I will cause to vanish and be exterminated, to be done away with and destroyed, perishing and ceasing to exist. So up there he has cut off and separated. That would be Sheol, eternal separation. Here he just says annihilated.
Yeah, you can't destroy the spirit in Sheol. It's going to live.
Right. So, you know, the first is, and it's kind of an interesting separation. It's the first time I've tried to make sense of this, but and I'm open to correction here. But my extrapolation of this is, the first is that do not perform any of the work of the heavenly messenger, and because this is a day of forgiveness and to approach Yahweh. Then he says, because any soul who by way of the relationship does not respond and answer the summons on this corporate day shall be cut off and separated. And that any soul who by association performs any of the business of the heavenly messenger on this day, they're going to cease to exist.
Are these people, I'm assuming these people that are doing this, are doing so in order to be so pleasing. And maybe so pleasing to themselves. And maybe
they're serving as the Pope, as Christ's vicar on earth. They're serving as the priest who turned the water into, or the wine into blood, and who have the ability of forgiveness. This is a day of forgiveness, and don't the Roman Catholic priests claim that they have the power through their confession to provide divine forgiveness?
Sure they do.
Yeah. Yahweh says, you're doing that. Your soul's going to be destroyed or going to be separated forever.
Yeah, that's aimed directly at clergy then. I mean,
directly at clergy.
Yeah.
Or let's just say that the set-apart spirit enlightens, right? So what about teachers that compete? The set-apart spirit protects. What about militaries that compete?
Anyone that's in the salvation business would apply too.
That's correct.
But it rings out to me, Paul, you know, when he says I completed the deal because he obviously couldn't do it all.
Oh,
from a Christian point of view.
As a bold statement.
I'm not going there. So, do not perform any part. Boy, this is the third warning here. Do not perform any part of the business of the heavenly messenger. This is an eternal and everlasting, clearly communicated prescription, inscribed instruction throughout all time, and all generations, and all of your assemblies and dwelling places. Is there
any wiggle room there?
Yeah, any wiggle room that a religious institution or a religious leader can provide, any, like when the Pope does his little blessing thing, is there, based on this, is there any chance whatsoever that the Pope's blessing can be anything but an aggravation to God?
Yeah. Well, in the context of when this actually takes place, the world is singularly satanic.
Correct.
I mean, it's one world, everything now.
Yeah. So, now, the other thing is, as Larry said, is that, okay, this is everlasting for all time, for all places. So how in the world could you have a religion that you claim is authorized by your Bible, and in the midst of your Bible is this statement that says Yom Kippurim is eternal and forever, and you completely ignore it?
Well, you'd have to be the same kind of adult that would outlaw Yahweh's name, wouldn't you?
You'd have to be. You'd have to be. Yeah. How can you say that there is, this is an Old Testament, and there's a New Testament with Christmas and Easter and Sunday worship, because all those things that God told the Jews, they no longer apply when Yahweh said, this is eternal and everlasting, olam, perpetual and enduring. How can you say that you can't do those things that are in the Torah? It's filled with laws that you can't do. And he says, this is a clearly communicated prescription.
Well, I think the way that you would have to do that is you would have to start calling Torah law, and you would have to call Shamar obey. That's how you would do that.
Go find a prescription in the law. And by the way, then he says, throughout time and all generations, how can you say that this only applies to Jews when it says throughout time and all generations?
And any nephesh, any soul.
Right. Okay. And all of your assemblies and dwelling places, intervals and times and households, settlements, locations, even situations. Is it limited to Jews and Israel? Was it limited to a time when they were there? No.
All human beings.
Yahweh is going to come back on this day, so he still thinks the day is important, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Yahweh established seven steps along his plan to salvation, to returning to the conditions found in Eden, only to have performed the first one and ignored the next six? Or how about from the Christian perspective? He performed the first one, and he performed Pentecost, the fourth one. But the rest of them, no, not going to happen, unless maybe there is a correlation between Paul's rapture and the trumpets of Teruah. Maybe he's going to do one, ignoring two, screwed up completely on three, four, but by the wrong name, five, by the wrong name, and then the rest of them, let's just forget about.
Sounds like we're into rabbinic Judaism almost there. Not even a small chance. I mean, there's.
Do you know how many festivals there are in rabbinic Judaism?
Is there 12?
12.
One per
month. And one per month. There are 12. There are not.
So what, when they're selling this deal, the way they're selling it, the rabbis, and somebody says, well, then what was Passover about if I got to flog myself now?
Right.
How do they reconcile that?
Right.
Poor choice of words, but you know.
Yeah, if the fungus of sin has been removed on matzah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Why do I have to be to?
Right. I mean, the lamb was slain. The lamb was slain for me. It lasts for a year in their way of thinking.
Wait a minute. They don't think that it was slain for them. They think they're making an offering and being pleasing. They're just a pleasing guy at that time. That's the essence of religion to begin with.
Yeah. At first I was talking to you and saying about sacrificing animals, and I said to you that, you know, the sacrifice is about two things. It's about the symbolism of what it represents, and it's about providing food for the feast. When I wrote you a letter, I said, when you had hamburger for lunch one day this week, was the bull sacrificed?
No.
The cow was not sacrificed, right? You know, I had a salmon dinner. That salmon was not sacrificed. It was... caught in a net and I ate it, and it was nourishing, tasty little sucker. But there was no sacrifice. You know, this idea that we're making a sacrifice is absurd. We're not. It's simply preparing a meal rife with symbolism. So, Yosha says, it is for you a time to rest and reflect. It's a Shabbat. By the way, if the first day of the month, of a lunar month, is a Sunday, first day of the week, and the seventh day is a Shabbat, how could the tenth day be a Shabbat?
Oh, you can't.
Isn't this the tenth day?
Well, this is a Shabbaton. It's a special Shabbaton.
Well, this is a Shabbat, a Shabbaton observance. He actually uses both words. It is for you a time of rest and reflection, a Shabbaton. So it's a Shabbat Shabbaton. So what he's doing here is defining Shabbaton is a tenth day. That means it's the observance of a day that may or may not fall on a natural Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
That we are to treat as we would treat a Shabbat. And then he's even saying, how would you treat a Shabbaton? Well, as Shabbat. It's a day, a time for you to rest and reflect, to cease from your ordinary labor. It's a Shabbaton observance. So here, just in case you didn't get it, I'm going to explain it to you. And how should you observe this time to rest and reflect on Yahweh? Well, your soul should respond to the summons and answer the call. Anna. In the ninth of the month, in the evening, from sundown until sunset, you should consistently observe, examine, consider, and totally focus upon your Shabbat. So, think about it. Be observant. Pay attention to what God has said. You'll learn something. That's God's instruction all the way through. Pay attention. Learn. And by the way, it says in the evening, from sundown to sunset.
Yeah, must be when his day starts at sundown, and not at 12 midnight or not at sunrise.
I just don't get it. Why people are confused?
There's this plethora of different things out there that are just designed to get you off the Torah, to get you to be malleable and stupid and unthinking.
Yeah.
Every one of them are traps, whether it's the lunar Shabbat or Yahweh's. There's a bunch of Masoretics running around now. Yahweh's day starts in sunrise.
Yeah. Well, you know what Larry, I'm just thinking of things that start at night and the darkness of night.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the second most actively celebrated U.S. Holiday is in America now? The second most actively celebrated holiday in America.
I'm going to guess Halloween. I don't know.
Halloween. Halloween is the substitute for the Day of Reconciliations.
Gosh.
Yeah, it would be, because that's what it's closest to, obviously.
Yeah,
yep.
It's Halloween. It's a spiritual day. All saints, all spirits, all hallows Eve.
Dead saints. Dead ghosts.
Oh, it's the day to celebrate the dead of the spirit world.
Yep.
So, here's what Yahweh has to say about that. Shall not be one found among you casting his son or daughter into participating in magic, causing his son or daughter to participate in magic, fortune-telling, witchcraft, consulting with dead spirits, or one who beguiles by summoning spirits, one who causes the premature death of others by way of the destructive worship of heathen deities. All who do these things are an abomination, hated and detested by Yahweh. I love that last part. This idea that, you know, I've constantly said I don't think it's resonated with much of maybe with people on the planet at this point where I've said, you know, our problem isn't hate speech. It's that we don't hate enough.
No, I agree. We
hate too much. We hate insufficiently. When speaking of religion, doesn't Yahweh say that all who are religious are an abomination? They're hated and despised by Yahweh.
Yeah.
How can we be wrong when we're emulating his?
Right. I mean, look, I've seen circumstances, actually been involved in a couple, where bullies were picking on people. And really what the bully needed was a good beat down. And they got one, okay?
Right.
And their whole attitude changed after that.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that. You know, these people that are out and they're... somebody asked me today, and it was in one of my posts, why would Yahweh bother to curse? Remember, he tells the clerics the signature mark of all religion is curses, is bowing, and that they're going to be bowing, right? I mean, he tells them that straight up. Why would Yahweh bother? And I said, because he hates them. He doesn't care what you do to yourself. He doesn't care. Go out and shoot yourself in the head.
What did he use to accost them?
Words.
And that's the one thing that I would be careful in saying. Well, I do think that there is a benefit of giving the bully that which the bully is dishing out, because it will change the bully.
Oh, it will.
The fact of the matter is that in the vast majority of cases, in the overwhelming preponderance of cases, the most effective means at showing
is always words.
Disgust.
It's always words. Don't get me wrong.
Hate with your words. Hate with your words.
But there are people that have picked on the wrong people. Believe me when I tell you this. Oh, that
you know, and Yahweh's not opposed to righteous indignation becoming physical what it needs to be.
Throwing chairs and people out of a temple. But,
exactly.
Yeah. Right. You know, so right. when I'm not saying this is some primary, you know, go be a thug on somebody. I don't believe
you know,
that.
When he stops the Magog War.
It's going to be brutal.
Physical.
Yeah.
It's
hundreds of millions of people are going to die.
Yep.
When he returns as light, billions of people are going to die.
Yeah, well, here's the thing I wanted to state, though, right there with the hated abomination. Yahweh is not the God of all love. I mean, what? That is a politically correct, nonsensical showing of the most poor judgment one can have. I think you wrote in Yada Yah when you were talking about all the different, you know, like Jericho, And you know, all the other tribes that were religious, that were just filthy, poisonous. Would you go back and kill the most 100,000 most ardent supporters of Mao and thus save, you know, 60 million otherwise innocent
Chinese? Right, absolutely.
Or this or that or the other thing? Well, sure you would if you got any compassion.
When recognized that the sinfulness... the revolting nature of the inhabitants of a dozen small towns in Israel, that they were so poisoned, they were so diseased, that it was not safe for his children to be exposed to them. What did he tell his children to do?
To light the moon.
To kill them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a really tough time killing. I'm not good at it. You know, if there's a mouse in the house, you know, my first instinct is to try to capture it in a net and throw the sucker outside. I'm just not good at killing. But if that mouse or rat is infected with a deadly disease, a plague, and it's in my house and my family's exposed to it, I got no problem.
Then you're going to kill it, then you're going to hang it, and then you're going to burn it.
You betcha. Yeah, with great zeal. Because that is the only proper and moral and compassionate and loving response. So
well, you point that out a lot,
religious
too.
People, Yeah, it's the only way that a father can demonstrate his love for his children is to detest that which is harmful to them. And so you should not be found. In fact, there should be even one found among them who is causing his son or daughter to participate in magic, in fortune telling, in witchcraft, in consulting with dead spirits, all the Catholic saints. One who beguiles by summoning spirits, all the medium shows that there are on television now.
Mm-hmm.
One who causes the premature death of others by destructive worship of heathen deities, Islam, Christianity, Hinduism. All who do these things are an abomination, hated and detested by Yahweh.
Look how the world embraced that series of books on the little witch.
Oh, yeah.
Which one?
The one, that woman, they made $1 billion and they made movies of them in the books. And you know, it was the guy who's a little young kid who's a witch.
Oh, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They just gobble that stuff up. And,
it's an occult series book. And you know, people tell me, oh, come on, you're reading too much. No,
That's what Disney World is all about. I always thought this even before I came to the truth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I always thought, what's the one thing missing in every single story that Disney has ever put out? You know, you go from the Seven Dwarfs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is no God. Everything's wonderful in this magic land without God, which is absolutely insane on its face.
Yeah, but there's witches.
Yeah, in all of
them. There are wolves.
Wizards, and they're good wizards and witches, too.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I turned them down. That was my first job offer in California, was to be an animator for Disney.
Wow. Okay there, Mickey.
No, I didn't do it. I chose not to do it. I said, I'll just do my own thing.
Be Donald or Daffy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know. It's pretty bad over there, Kirk. And, you know, California, ask you out about it. It's got a lot of flakes out there, you know.
Hear the word which Yahweh proclaims to you, old household of Israel. Yahweh says, do not walk in the ways of the Goyim. And do not teach the signs or the symbols from the sky. For the Gentiles are confused and destroyed by them. For the customs and traditions of the foreign nations are delusional. They cut down trees from the forest, the work of their hands with an axe. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it down so that it will not totter. Their trees are like finely decorated cultic objects. They can't speak. They cannot walk, and they must be carried. Don't revere them. Instead, from them, there is nothing beneficial. There is none like you, Yahweh. You are powerful, and your great personal and proper name is mighty. Who would not revere you? Indeed, it is your due. For in all of the wise men in Gentile nations and in all of the empires, there is no one like you. They are altogether stupid and foolish in their doctrines and teaching, and their delusional idols made of decorated trees. How about that for a direct condemnation of the most popular religion in human history?
And its most popular symbol. I mean, if the menorah represents Yahweh, it's certainly the Christmas tree that represents...
That and the cross, yeah.
That and the cross.
Well, probably the Christmas tree over the cross.
But what is, when it talks about that you have to stand it up, you revere it, it would totter down... It's a doctrine made of decorated tree. Isn't the cross a
wooden tree?
Decorated, a wooden tree with the decoration of a crucifix on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a decoration of a wooden tree, made with a wooden tree.
Yeah, but here he's clearly talking about their Christmas tree.
Yeah, I think at the beginning it's strictly the Christmas tree. In the end,
I think it fits both.
In the end, I think it's the cross. I think in the beginning it's absolutely the Christmas tree. In the end, I think it's the cross. Mm-hmm. Read again. But by the way, the symbols, he's making it very clear. He's talking about Christianity by these symbols. It's the confusion of it. It's the delusional nature and how stupid you have to be altogether to buy into it that is the real most important part of this message. And the fact that Christianity is an amalgamation of Goyim paganism. It's the paganism of Rome. It's taking the halos and the Sundays and the Son of the Sun and turning them into a religion. So it's every word here is besmirching Christianity, and it reads, "Hear the word which Yahweh proclaims to you, O household of Israel." Yahweh says, "Do not walk in the ways of the Goyim nations, and do not teach the signs or symbols of the sky, for the Gentiles are confused and destroyed by them. For the customs and traditions of the foreign nations are delusional. They cut down trees from the forest, the work of their hands with an axe. They decorate it with silver and gold. They fasten it down so it will not totter. Their trees are like finely decorated cultic objects. They can't speak. They can't walk. They must be carried. Do not revere them. Indeed, from them there is nothing beneficial. There is nothing and no one like you, Yahweh. You are powerful and you are great, particularly your personal and proper name is mighty. Who would not revere you? Indeed, it is your due. For in all of the wise men and Gentile nations and in all of their empires, there is none like you. They are altogether stupid and foolish, worthless, in their doctrines and teachings, comprised of decorated trees. I think the second one is the cross. I think the first one is the Christmas tree.
It could be either. It could be either.
Well, look at all the
Catholic
churches.
Take gold and everything else and lay them out on a cross. I mean,
think about how many idols that they have decorated and worship.
Delusional idols. It says right there, made of decorated trees. Sure. They're sure.
That's right.
It can be both.
How many women are wearing a cross that's all decorated, bejeweled, carved? My gosh.
Yes.
Letting a decorated tree,
so
I don't know what else
the Roman Catholic Church eliminated the second statement that Yahweh etched in stone and then turned the tenth one into two statements so they would still have ten because they had so many idols that they couldn't have a declaration from God.
Condemning idols. Yeah, of
condemning
course.
Idols.
Yeah, it was too out front there. Of course, now they're out front about the fact they worship Lucifer. They say so.
Yeah, of course.
I've heard that from you. I got that email from you.
Yeah, sure.
Wow.
I mean, it's getting pretty bad when they don't even hide anymore. I mean, we can say that of the political actors as well, but they're in your face. We're here to create a one-world government, which is exactly what Yahweh said they would do. Right.
You have a communist at the head of the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, sure. They invented it.
it is amazing that you would have. He is an avowed communist. His rhetoric is wholly and completely communist.
Redistribution.
Right. Not even a hint of anything else. And so you have him parading as a political entity, speaking to Congress,
and they're all excited that he's coming. They are all excited he's coming.
It's a very bizarre, very, very bizarre. I mean, this is the Roman Empire.
Roman Empire. Treading upon the whole world, the worst and most vicious of all beasts, just as Yahweh predicted. Well, gentlemen, we've come to an end. What I thought was, I hope was, a good use of an hour and a half.
I think so.
There's lots of talk.
I actually enjoyed this show. It was
very
beautiful. It was beautiful. You know, the fact that we're talking about you know, the adoptive mother as opposed to some burnt offering, which doesn't exist there.
You know, and the thing that I prepared that I wanted to talk about tonight, we didn't get to. We made more progress than we typically do, but I wanted to turn to Zachariah, because in Zachariah you find the integration of Yom Kippurim and Yahweh's return is life.
Absolutely.
And hopefully we'll be in a position to do that next week, because there is the insights that are provided by Zachariah on his return on Yom Kippurim.
Yeah, we should certainly go through this whole thing. This is lovely. I mean, what's being done here is sharing the words.
Yeah.
And, man, this is just great.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the show. Thank you.
Bahar has become my new favorite word.
Stupid. Which one?
Bahar.
Stupid. Yeah, I know.
Stupid. I'm going to use that a lot. Where's that
stupid?
Karen, I've been doing that since you sent me the email.
Yeah, how about on Monday, Kirk and Larry, uh-huh. You're free to join us. These two passages, one from Devarim and this one from Yirmiyah, which condemn religion. Wouldn't it be a great starter for the program on Monday? Is that remiss?
Sure.
We'll call
in the second hour a little bit earlier.
Yeah, a little bit earlier. Yeah, we'll start it whenever you call in.
Okay. What time do you want to call in, Larry? About 8:30?
I'm not sure I can make it is my problem.
Oh, okay.
There.
Yeah.
I don't want to commit. But if I can call in, I will.
Okay.
I absolutely will.
Okay.
All right. I'll
try
about a half an hour earlier, that's all right.
Yeah, and we can also go through this, the Zachariah, because the Zachariah is what Yosha quoted in the Olivet Discourse.
Zachariah is that's got to be one of my most...
I know, that's your favorite. That's your favorite.
I'm right there with it, because, you know, for people that say the covenant has been renewed, it's a showstopper. You can show the moment the covenant's renewed.
Yeah.
And I also find, of course, that's all prophetic, but when you start talking about, fast-flying war machines with drivers in them, if that doesn't peel away a little bit of your eye, the coating on your eyes, you're insane.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I was reading Yirmiyah today looking for that passage for you. Boy, there was a lot to love there, too.
Yeah, well, let's get into it. I mean,
the
words themselves, every time I get some more extant words broken down, they go into a note, and so everybody gets to see them. And there's, literally now I think I've got over 750 notes I put out from time to time.
Yeah. Well, like, for example, what we're reviewing today, I did send it to you guys by way of email.
I've already made a note of it.
Yeah.
It's out.
Yeah. And it's, while I think there is real value in preparing, there's also value in sharing what insights you receive as you're considering the words.
These are were people that were illiterate that are part of the covenant. And so they heard other people's words, as an example, Shimon.
Right.
This is an example. And so, there's no doubt that making connections and going over those words and seeing what those words mean, many people are looking at, books named after the sun goddess, the chair of the root with Bevel, out there, and they're seeing, and you'll provide a burnt offering, and,
they are Bahar. They are Bahar.
Right. I do not.
Kirk's new favorite word.
Favorite word.
Yeah,
when I know you were judging me about that. When I sit there and I'll translate a whole lot, so I'll have something to offer. And then she'll come in and she'll say, "Come to bed." I say, "Well, I just want to get three more words and I'll be fine." And I do. And then she'll say, "Well, he's going to change the subject tomorrow."
Yeah, I know.
Because that's how
it
is.
But regardless, if you never bring it up again,
you learned
tremendous amounts.
I don't
begrudge it at all. So
I
just like to have a little bit of a starter so I can figure out which power to grab.
I think there is a difference, and differences are good. So there's a difference between your approach and my approach. And that is the text, what we're looking at is the same. But as an artist, you've trained yourself to be highly observant. as an artist, the only way that you can be an effective artist is to examine all the little details.
That's
the only way you can be an artist. My whole proclivity, I've got a gazillion flaws. I've only got one asset, and my one asset is I like to make connections.
Yeah.
That's my thing. And so it's about reading what is said and then connecting it to the big picture, associating the big picture. And so it's just an entirely different approach to the exact same text. But what's going to make eternity fun is that everything we enjoy for all eternity, we're going to approach from a slightly different perspective. So that, for example, the three of us will all add to the enjoyment of each other.
Yeah. Let's hope.
Yeah. Oh, we will. You're going to be. You're going to have so many wonderful things happen to you. My gosh.
But different is good.
The one thing that I want to add here, just briefly, is that upon the return, when we have, the one-third dead and then tested in the fire, and it appears 50% of them are forced to leave. I'm not exactly sure on that, but 50% are, half are forced to leave Jerusalem and be cut off.
Right.
But this small amount of people, in the scheme of things, that are in Jerusalem, that are still alive, that are family, I believe this is just... That's what the whole 7 years tribulation was about, is that they learned, because you brought this up earlier, Kirk, I believe that over 7 years of watching the rabbis' leadership fail almost totally, they've come around to the truth, and they said, why not look at Yahweh's words as opposed to listening to these goofs?
Sometimes you can be pushed in the corner where you only have one out. You either take it or don't. And then,
they'll
recognize this is we've tried everything else. Then let's go read the Torah. Same as it's almost like that story of what was the king, before they tried everything and he went in and he read the Torah and he said, we got to get rid of all this stuff.
Yeah, that was Hezekiah. The Northern Kingdom tried everything, and so did Yehuda. They tried treaties and negotiations, and they tried appeasement, they tried military resistance, they tried it all. They tried everything except the one thing that works.
Yeah, they tried to compromise, which is really the art of politics. So basically, when you get right down to it, your guns and ammo and your food stored away and all this patriotism and all the nonsense, when it really hits the fan, it's not going to do it. That's not going to make you live. It won't work. It really won't work.
No. It's your country and your military and your Social Security and your Medicare and all of that is absolutely and unequivocally going to fail you. The only thing that's going to be dependable is Yahweh.
And that's why I think the 7 years. It's seven... some people need a brick to fall on their head, I've been in that position, I know. But, others need an entire house. And that's what happens here. And it's horrid. When you start looking at that, especially that last 3.5 years, that's nothing but bad news every day. And more than a person can even take.
You got a minute for one quick little story? A little bit early today. We came, after the first hour, we went and walked the dog, and then we came back and listened to UNIQ. And then I flipped on the TV to get the news, and Wolf Blitzer, I call him, I think he's a Benjamite, Wolf Blitzer on CNN, he and two women are sitting there, and they're complaining about Trump because he didn't tell that guy that Obama's a Muslim.
A Christian.
Not a Muslim, but a Christian. And it occurred to both Terry and I said, well, isn't that kind of an insult? Why is it an insult for a politically correct person to be called to call somebody a Muslim?
Exactly. Yeah.
If I would say, but Wolf, are you saying I mean, I'd hang him with his own rope.
So are you saying calling him a Muslim
is a bad thing after you politically wreck jerk?
Yeah.
I mean, people can't think at all.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, why is it somebody's job to correct somebody's religious?
You can just not answer it. You can answer it the way you want to answer it.
What he is up to him. That's not my it. Whether or not he was born in America, I'm not convinced, but I'm not going there. It's not that relevant.
Who cares? At this point, they ain't going to kick him out anyway.
Right. But his religion, I mean, he certainly quotes from the Quran. He celebrates Ramadan.
Yeah.
His father was a Muslim. He went to madrasa. By the Quran's definition, he's a Muslim. So why is it important to correct that?
His ring says Allah is God.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've had other people.
They can Photoshop anything, but I'm going to tell you. He's a Muslim, pal. I mean,
he's also a
communist.
I think he's the same thing that the Torahless one will be.
He is a brand of horror.
By the way, they do have what's called an Islamic communist. They do have such a thing.
Several of the terrorist organizations in the West Bank and in Jordan were socialist Islamic communist Muslims.
The nations inside the Soviet Union, when they have kind of blended together with the communists, taking the best of both? I mean, isn't that normal for most people? That would not be odd to me, with so many of them being behind the Iron Curtain in the old days.
Yeah.
Well, you know, part of what Yahweh was talking to us about here, too, did entail political correctness. That's an absolute religion. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah?
Sure it is.
It's because it is foolish, because almost everything that's politically correct is invalid, almost universally invalid. So it's just flat out stupid.
Yeah, the whole idea is to get you not to think.
Right, it's delusional. Right?
Yeah, sure. Right, stupid and delusional. What do you think of that, Kirk?
Who aren't these the guys that lift up their trees?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they hug a tree.
They put it on the lawn at the warehouse.
Yeah.
Biggest one in town.
Well, not to the Christmas tree. The socialist, secularist, humanists are earth-loving environmentalists.
Oh, yeah. Hug a tree. Worship the earth.
Worship the tree.
Mother Earth.
Tree.
Right. That's been done before up in the high places with
trees. Oh, yeah.
This is nothing new.
Yeah, we're just returning to worshiping the earth. You know, they'll have the bumper sticker, the earth does not belong to us, we belong to her. And so, that's their view.
To her, because she was impregnated by the sun.
Correct. Yeah, socialist secular humanism is a religion. You know, it's God, it's God.
Sure it is.
Mother Earth is divine. We belong to her.
Yeah, that was the concept of the Madonna out in Babylon, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it goes on and on. I'm astounded every so often where you can lay out words as direct as these are, and it means nothing to the faithful. Nothing at all.
Nothing.
Yeah. You know, I was looking I know you want to get away, but I was looking through some old books trying to look for some things. I've got them all in lots of boxes in the closet. So I was looking through a couple of them, I found a couple of them that are books on morals. I mean, nobody would write a book on morals anymore. You couldn't get it published.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, you couldn't.
I mean, these were 100 years old or more, I thought to myself, when's the last time somebody came out with, a book on morality?
And why would it matter?
But we don't teach anything worth a darn.
I know.
Well, the only thing worth teaching, according to Yahweh, is Torah. Mm-hmm. And all these teachers we have and all these universities, I mean, I'm not talking, sure there's some medical advantages here and there and this and that. But, the bulk of the universities, there's nothing that they're teaching worth knowing. I mean, nothing. Collectively.
No, I think there are in some of the sciences, and
yeah, I just said
some
that.
Degree,
some
medicines, but medicines and sciences. But if you're studying history, if you're studying English, if you're studying literature, if you're studying politics or communication or
social work,
yeah. It's if anything, it's counterproductive. Yeah, I think it's pretty much counterproductive.
Well, it's pretty much a hopeless case we're in. You know, I've got to ask you, because I haven't been listening a lot, okay? And I haven't been paying a lot of attention at all to the news, because it's all ridiculous. Yeah, well, what I see is the UN and Obama and the Pope all coming together on everything that matters, you know? And that tells me just about all I need to know. But as I sit there and I watch this, what is it that a Bible believing Christian, and they seem to spend a lot of time in Revelation, don't they? Right.
Well, a lot of the preachers make money on prophecy,
in time prophecy, and so forth. So they spend a lot of time on this stuff.
Right.
What in the hell do these people think is going on?
Oh, everyone I talk to thinks the time's coming. But at the end there, Jesus will save them.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm sure.
But they don't know
the hour. They think it's coming fast, but they won't tell you the day, and they don't know the hour, but they feel like it's really close, and they're right. You can't see the whole world fall apart. And not know. They know. Unless they stick their head in the sand, they know.
Yeah, things are really bad.
Yeah, but they always seem to have a political answer. Let's put Trump up there like he's not one of them. Whoever they put, they don't risk trillions of dollars on a vote.
The most horrible thing that's happened that I see is even a few years ago, Americans used to think that they could just export the wars over there and they could send their troops over and beat them all up and then they won't come here. And now they've opened the doors to the Muslim invasion and there's no going back now. I mean, that has made me sick for about a week and a half.
Well, four major cities in Britain are now primarily Islamic. The British are the minority in their own city.
But you can't have enough babies to compete with 12, 15 million people coming across.
No, because they're all on welfare, by the way. They're all on the dole.
It's
an insane proposition. And you sit there and you watch and you go, wait a minute, who's really doing this? The Moseys, or is it their Western oligarchs that are in charge of their own countries? And I'll tell you who's doing it.
Yeah.
It's the people passing the laws from within the Western countries.
Correct.
Yeah, but somebody's given them the money. They had a show about this family that went from Syria to Greece, and the family, and they followed the whole family there. And he was a out of work house painter. And she was a stay-at-home mom, which you have to be as a Muslim. And then they get on a boat, and they have to pay $4,000 to get to Greece, and somehow they get $4,000. I listened to IQ today, and IQ said, where did the money come from? And I'd ask the same question. Who the hell was giving everybody $4,000 to get on a boat?
Well, where do the rocket launchers come from? The same
place. Well, we know that, but I mean, it's just...
No, it's the same place.
It has to be. The Muslims are paying them to get there.
The Saudi Arabians have said, absolutely no way in the world are we taking them in. They're terrorists.
Yeah. How come that's not a headline?
Really?
Newspaper.
Yeah, we're not taking any of them. They're all Muslims. They have plenty of land, plenty of money. They're not taking any of them in. Why? Because they're Muslims.
Yeah.
They're terrorists. Saudis are Muslims. They know.
Well, they threaten the king. They don't want their money cut off. They don't want somebody to overthrow them. They will.
No, and the inheritance that you get by being a Arab Muslim in Saudi Arabia is you get this.
$50,000 a year, yeah.
Oh, I think it's like $175,000.
Oh, well, it's inflation, yeah. It used to be.
Yeah, but the more that there are, the less there is to go around. So, you know, it's that reason.
They have every reason to keep them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. They don't want
But what is that What is bizarre from the Western oligarch's point of view, okay, and I don't care if you're in Sweden, which is now the rape capital of Europe, by the way. Thank you, Islam, especially African Islam. That's mainly who's doing that. But the Western oligarchs seem to keep opening the door wider and whiter and whiter.
I think Yada said it best. You know, if they have enough horror going on, imported mm-hmm. horror,
yes.
then they can become a dictator.
Then, yeah,
then everyone will beg them to become the dictator.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Well, there's people something going on there. Right. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, look at 9/11 and the Patriot Act and how much
oh, yeah.
freedom America gave up for the promise of security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the NSA gets to listen to everything. Well, not that they weren't, but now they get to openly admit it. This phone
correct.
Call is listened
yeah.
to.
That's for monitoring.
Correct.
And I don't see how Roman people think they're going to hide from it, because there's all kinds of people that leave FB, okay? But yet they'll leave me their email as though somehow, you know, that can't be read. You know, you pick up a phone.
Yeah.
They got voice recognition. They can pick up my voice anytime they want to. Not that I count. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, y'all was watching over you, though.
Well,
so who cares?
That doesn't mean they didn't saw Yasha Yah in half, okay?
Well, that's true. That's
and
true.
I'm not looking forward to that moment. But, you know, if they do, I think I'll just spit on them. I don't really care that much. What, you know, are you going to put me through 2 minutes of misery or something? You know?
I'd rather not, just like you. But if
mm-hmm.
that's what happens,
that's what happens. Happens. That's what happens.
Yeah,
I know exactly what will happen with you, Yada. You they don't have enough gags, okay?
They don't. No, I'd be yapping at them the whole time. Yeah, it would
I know.
Stop yapping. Yeah,
it would be effective, too. It would be effective.
Yeah,
in
yeah, never stop yapping, yeah. But, you know, I don't think it's going to happen. I think as his children, we are.
I think we might make it to Tarua.
I think we will. That's my assessment.
Well, that's my thought as well, mm-hmm. but, yeah. you know, that doesn't mean we don't go through some misery before a little bit.
Yeah, we will.
I think so.
I enjoyed it, gentlemen. Thank you very
yeah,
much.
Me too.
No, this was
all
a
right.
lovely show. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, guys. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.